Many of you think that the government disclosure is coming soon, and I'm going to tell you why there will never ever be any disclosure and why. Over the past year, I have been asked why the government won't come clean on this issue. They say, what's the big deal anyway? We all know UFOs exist and it's no secret. Why won't the government admit that the flying saucers exist in spite of clear evidence, both in film, video, and witness testimony? Why does the government insist on denying their existence and punishing many of those who make reports about UFOs? We know that the government has recovered at least 30 extraterrestrial craft, ranging in size from 20 to 30 feet to 250 feet in diameter. All of these craft are moved in the dark of night to secret storage facilities. If the craft is too large to be moved, it is buried on the spot. We know that the government has recovered as many as 60 alien bodies from as many as 7 different civilizations, many from as far away as hundreds of light years. These craft are moved in total secrecy by a team called the Blue Berets, made up from men and who have no relatives and few friends. This is because these men are threatened with their lives if they breathe a word about their activities, and they present no problem if they have to be permanently eliminated. These teams are highly skilled and trained to move saucers without being discovered or tracked. They have large vehicles and cranes, including giant helicopters, to move the saucers. In many cases, the saucers are placed on low boys, sometimes 2 or 3, driving in tandem over the countryside, crossing roads and highways, fording streams and rivers. They have huge panels which can be rapidly erected around a saucer to hide it during the preparation for moving. Diversions such as 18-wheeler highway accidents or sometimes fake gas leaks to keep the public at bay. Sometimes members of the public accidentally get a good view of the operation and they are taken and undergo rigorous mind control to make them forget what they saw. We know that these teams operate in full immunity from law or military enforcement. These extraterrestrial recoveries have been going on for over 70 years and have worked in complete secrecy. We know that the secret government has exchanged information with several extraterrestrial occupants about the star systems they come from. So the question is, why the secrecy? What's the big deal? What is the importance? What is so important that the secret government will go to unlimited effort to hide all of this? I am going to tell you what the secret is, but please be aware that you will not like the answer. So don't blame me. Most of you are willing to disregard all warnings in return for the truth of the cover-up. This cover-up began well before Roswell in July of 1947. The cover-up went back at least 20 years before Roswell, and that is why the Roswell cover-up was so well organized and cover stories placed instantly in the newspapers. Actually, it goes far deeper than that. Mankind, as we know it, as we know ourselves to be, was engineered and fabricated by an extraterrestrial civilization far more advanced than us by millions of years. Human civilization has been placed far and wide, thousands of light years distance. There are billions of human civilizations designed and manufactured by highly advanced extraterrestrial beings. They plant human civilizations by the millions all over the universe. And these human civilizations are in addition to the trillions of other extraterrestrial civilizations that also exist. Which brings me to the Big Bang. There was no Big Bang. The universe has been here forever and will be here forever. It had no beginning and will have no end. Mainstream science would have you believe that the universe is 18 billion years old. The universe has been here forever. which brings me to our solar system. Mainstream science would have you believe that there are only 8 planets in our solar system. In fact, there are 40 planets, all with civilizations far more advanced than Earth. Mainstream science would have you believe that the Earth is 5 billion years old, when in fact it is more than 11 billion years old and has harbored many advanced civilizations that have come and gone during that time. Which brings me to the moon. There is a human civilization of about 25 million living on the moon, far more advanced than us. So disclosure 2.0. Now, with all of this information, it should be obvious there is no God, as we have been taught to believe. And there is no God. If there is no God, there is no sun, who has been walking the earth on the face of the earth, turning water into wine and rising from the dead. Nor was there any parting of the Red Sea or great floods. These are all stories from the Bible, which was fabricated by the extraterrestrials, parables to guide mankind in their development. Considering the size of the universe, it is impossible for any God to have fabricated it in 6 days and resting on the seventh. When we pray, there is no God listening, but there are spirit guides, friends or relatives who have passed on and are watching our development. Our spirit guides listen carefully to each and every word, and plea and request, and if they feel it is warranted, they act accordingly. But they do listen to our prayers, even though they go unanswered, many go unanswered. This is a disclosure you have been eagerly waiting for, and you can see why the secret government has refused to let the public in on the big secret. They feel that there is no God, that society will disintegrate. So what can you do about it? Live your life with integrity, without envy, hate, or greed, and don't seek revenge. Karma, the balance of nature, will take care of that for you. NASA pulled off the second greatest hoax ever perpetrated on mankind about 52 years ago. And here are 25 reasons we couldn't possibly have gone to the moon in 1969. But Ron Howard's and Tom Hanks' recreation of Apollo 13 hoax, notwithstanding, there is just no way the Apollo missions could have orbited or landed on the moon in the late 60s and early 70s, regardless of NASA's ever-present and dishonest protestations, which seem to have increased in the past couple of years in a futile attempt to resurrect the gigantic hoax on mankind. Virgil Gus Grissom couldn't keep his mouth shut from telling the truth. His last public comment, he was standing next to the Apollo 1 command module, was, "This thing ain't going to the moon in 2 years. This thing ain't going to the moon in 10 years. You see, Gus was a brilliant engineer, and he could clearly see that the moon mission was a scam. Nothing worked because it wasn't supposed to work. The plan was always to fake the moon mission, follow moon missions to steal a taxpayer $40 billion for their own space command. So here are 25 reasons why NASA couldn't have possibly gone to the moon in 1969. Number one, this Saturn V never worked. What the public saw launched was a Saturn 1B dressed up to look like a Saturn V. Proof, out of the 200 public films of the launch, not a single one showed a second stage ignition. Without a second stage, they couldn't possibly have gotten into orbit, much less gotten to the moon. What they did was set an explosion to simulate the second stage firing, but there was no real second stage ignition because there was no real second stage. The fake Saturn V never went into orbit and never went to the moon. Number two, The Van Allen Belt, which extends in three layers from 500 miles up to 25,000 miles altitude, discovered with the number two and three Explorer rockets launched in 1959, detected massive and lethal radiation. NASA's answer to the problem was, we just flew around it. Utter crap. Flew around what? How? That would be like getting out of the inside of a coconut without breaking the husk, or the inside of an orange without breaking the peel. Three, not enough computer data storage for the lunar lander to take off from the moon and rendezvous with a command module in orbit. All the astronauts had to had was 30K, which was not enough, near enough for a rendezvous with their orbiter. Number four, the moon's gravity is 69.71 that of Earth. Perry Spolter, the author of Gravitational Force of the Sun, published by Grana Press in 1993, computed as a three-body equation for July 20th, 1969, moon's gravity is 69.71. Spolter scientifically proves that Newton's law of gravitation and Einstein's theory of relativity, both general and special, were wrong. All the calculations were for gravitational force of 1/6 that of Earth. They would have significantly more fuel, had needed more fuel for a launch, landing, and takeoff. Number five, the daytime color of the lunar sky is saffron yellow. Howard Menger, guest of the moon inhabitants in 1956, wrote a book called From Outer Space to You, and in 1956, and became a lunar advisor to the Pentagon. An alleged Apollo, and also Chinese and Israeli lunar photos show a black sky. It's actually saffron yellow. Six, no visible condensation fog from the astronaut's backpack, indicating cooling in work. The temperature at 10 a.m. in the morning, according to NASA, would have fried the astronauts in 5 minutes in those spacesuits. Seven, no seats or anywhere to sit in the lunar lander for the alleged 18 hours deorbit to the lunar surface. Standing up for 18 hours? No, not possible. Number eight, door to the lunar lander not large enough to exit with a fully inflated spacesuit. No Apollo photos show any astronaut inside the door frame. They either show it inside or after exiting the lander. Number nine, in the lunar lander, no cockpit audio nor sound coming from the 10,000 pound thrust rocket 18 inches from the astronaut engine, allegedly braking for landing. There was not enough fuel for the Saturn 1B dressed up as Saturn 5 to achieve orbit, much less a trip to the moon and back. Despite several modern lunar orbiters and landing advanced cameras that have taken advanced photos of the surface of the moon, none have shown any of the Apollo mission landers or associated equipment. This goes on and on and on. One of the last points is Neil Armstrong's speech on December 25th, or on the speech on the 25th anniversary of the Apollo 11 mission about removing Truth's protective layers. What protective layers was Armstrong talking about? At no time after the alleged lunar flight did Armstrong ever state that he had been on the moon. There was no photo of Armstrong on the moon because he wouldn't allow it, the fake photos to be shown. When Armstrong said, one small step for a man. That is what he meant. He did not forget to say a man. He was telling the world that the mission was fate, but for the benefit of all mankind, which is arguably correct. In his first written account, Buzz Aldrin writes that he would become violently ill, vomiting when trying to recall his lunar walk. This was due to the unperfected mind control. Later, this technique was improved, which didn't cause such a violent reaction to the recall attempt. After World War II, there was a Project Paperclip. The reason this happened was because shortly before the end of World War II, both Germany and the U.S. were trying to perfect their atomic bomb. The U.S. could perfect everything except the plutonium. Germany could perfect the plutonium, but not any of the ignition or other requirements for the atomic bomb. So within 2 months before the end of World War II, Germany came to a secret conference with the U.S. government, and they said, we'd like to give you the plutonium you need to finish the bomb, to bomb Japan, Hiroshima, and the other city. And in return, all we ask for is that after the war, you let in over 10,000, and the original figure was 5,000, 10,000, it turned out to be more, soldiers, and give them permanent citizenship, which is what happened. And it was organized and directed by the brothers, I'm trying to think, John Foster Dulles, who was Secretary of State, and Alan Dulles, his brother, who was head of the CIA, and Eleanor Dulles, who was head of the Berlin desk. And what they did is they infiltrated NACA, N-A-C-A, which became NASA. And ever after that, all the employees at NASA were Germans, except for the administrator, which was always U.S. And they had infiltrated NASA, and they had their own space program, which is based in Kwajalein Island in the South Pacific. And what they did is they ripped off the taxpayer of the $40 billion they spent on Apollo for their own rockets that were launched out of Kwajalein. And it was those rockets that helped build the direct energy weapons. There's a secret base also in Makrahanish, which is partially underground, partially above ground. And about 60 years ago, they perfected, the U.S. perfected the hiding of a hologram, and which is can be used to hide anything on the surface of the earth. For instance, in the Nevada test site, there's a new secret airfield halfway between the Tonopah Test Range and Groom Lake, which is enormous, and it's now being used, and it's hidden by holograms. There's also another runway, actually a huge facility, 44 miles south of Wendover in the Fervor Flats at Nevada, which are used for the Black Triangles. When Ben Rich took over from Kelly Johnson, the F-117 was in full design. And what they did is they designed another airplane called the F-19. This was more advanced than the F-117A, and it was put under a Navy program and in a secret part of Ben Rich's office there in Burbank. General Bonds happened to be up in Ben Rich's office and happened to see a door that had a lock that was only used by the Navy, and asked Ben Rich if he could see what was inside, and Benridge told him he didn't have enough high enough clearance. And he said, well, either you give me the clearance or I'm going to take an axe and go through that. So all of this you can find out, written just as I'm telling you, in Ben Rich's book called Skunkworks. And what happened is Ben Rich gave the appropriate papers for General Bonds to fill out and let him in there. And General Bonds found out the complete design and fabrication for the F-19. And this is why in 1984, General Bonds was the only one to know about the secret F-19, of which 64 were made, and neither Congress nor anybody else found out about it. Still to this day, it's a secret. But what happened is the Alliance couldn't afford to risk General Bonds knowing about this. So what they did is they offered him a ride in the F-19 out of Groom Lake, and they put him in the F-19 and asked him to, you know, take it around for 30 minutes. And General Bond took off, flew to the south, around to Little Skull Mountain. And on his way back, they transmitted electronic signals to the flight controls, the F-19, that gave it elevators full down command. And it crashed into Little Skull Mountain at a speed of 450 knots and killed General Bonds. It was blamed on a MiG-23, which it was not. There'd be no reason that General Bonds would be flying a MiG-23. So they have been doing some very nasty things up at the test site, and they are in complete control of the new secret test site, which is halfway between Tonopah and Groom Lake. It's located on Paiute Mesa, and it's about a mile underground. And when they started building this in 1980, I happened to be flying for the Department of Energy on a program where I overflew the underground atomic bomb test. And I had hours and hours and hours of flying around while waiting for the test to go, where I got a chance to look around. Well, there isn't much to see in the desert, but I noticed this huge white area up on the Paiute Mesa, and I couldn't figure out what made it white. Well, it turns out that what I was seeing was they had taken off the top of a quartz mountain, which turned the ground white, and they were building the secret test site laboratory a mile under the ground. Now, when they got ready to open this, they needed 4,500 people from Las Vegas to work there. And they had to get them 4,500 people from Las Vegas to the test site, which was about 110 miles away, without anybody finding out. Now, we know that though there's six Boeing 737, those white with the red stripe, that take people to the Tonopah Test Range and Groom Lake. They couldn't use those because they didn't want anybody in that program to know about the Paiute Mesa secret program. So what they did is, at the cost of $2.6 billion, they built a subway, a maglev subway underground, that started. The first main terminal was at below 100 feet below the Luxor, then to the Bellagio, and then up to Paiute Mesa, which took about 20 minutes. And the reason they picked the Bellagio was they made a deal with Steve Wynn to use his underground parking, because there were so many people that needed a place to park, and they had a secret tunnel that went to the terminal. Since then, and that's been 40 years ago, they built another third terminal under the Aria, and that's where they load the passengers now and take them up to the Paiute Mesa. There is another secret base that the U.S. has on British soil called Macrahanish, and it is used for the spacecraft that we have coming from orbit, some of the space stations we have in orbit are actually metal forging, where they forge metal and huge pieces of coverings for not only aircraft, but ships, Navy ships, both submarines and aircraft carriers. What this covering is called is D.D, and it's a very light, very strong metal covering that used for the hull of an aircraft carrier or submarine. And with a small electrical charge, it can keep the water away, the ocean away from the hull about 5 to 7 centimeters. And what this does is eliminates all drag and allows an aircraft carrier, which can normally do about 40 knots, it allows it to do about 100 knots. And the huge pieces of metal are flown out of orbit by these huge transport planes that land at Macrahanish and are hidden by the holograph transmitters there at Macrahanish. Several years ago, President Trump initiated the U.S. Space Command. And the question is, does he know about Space Command, which everybody who knows about both, what's going on? Does the president know? Certainly, I've written the president and given him a video telling him what's going on. Whether he listened to it or not, I don't know. When my folks moved to Reno in 1970, I was living here in Las Vegas, and I spent a lot of time driving back and forth to Reno. And halfway between Reno and Las Vegas, there's a little desert town called Hawthorne. And you go drive through Hawthorne. It's an old ammunition dump for the Navy. And there is a sign, a blue sign at the entrance to the town that says U.S. Naval Undersea Warfare Center. So I wondered what could be going on there. And it was years before I found out. And every once in a while, when I was deadheading on airplanes flying over Hawthorne, somebody would mention there's a submarine base down there. Well, there's a lake there called Walker Lake. It's about 15 miles long and 100 feet deep, and there's no way you're going to get a submarine into that lake. So it must mean something else. And eventually, about 10 years ago, I found out what the story was. And the story was that the 7 western states of the United States sit on a geological plate that floats on the Pacific Ocean. And the Pacific Ocean underlies those 7 states. And you could take a submarine and go anywhere under those 7 states and come up anywhere that a hole was dug from the surface down to the ocean. The first hole they dug was from Hawthorne, and it was 35 feet in diameter, and they made an elevator that went from the surface, which was 3,400 feet above mean sea level, down to the Pacific Ocean. And as a matter of fact, there is a large submarine base there in the Pacific underneath Hawthorne. The reason this was such an advantage to the Navy was there's a secret Navy weapons production facility in the mountains just to the northwest of Hawthorne. It's hidden inside the mountains, and they make all kinds of missiles and offensive type munitions used in submarines. And when they had completed them, the only way they could get to the Alameda or San Diego was to truck it down through highway between Las Vegas and Reno. They go up through Reno and over to San Francisco Bay, with these munitions unloaded at the helicopter, the submarine facility, or head to the south through Las Vegas to San Diego, to the big submarine base right there. And they found out by delivering, by manufacturing this elevator, all they had to do was lower the munitions and rockets and propellants and everything else that they needed on the nuclear submarines, was to send it down in this elevator to the submarine bays under Hawthorne. Now, before they found out and explored thoroughly the Pacific Ocean underneath the seven states, they lost two submarines in the exploration. One was Pressure, and the other was the Skipjack. And the Navy went to all kinds of machinations to cover up the disappearance of those nuclear submarines. One, they said, had an accident in the Pacific, and one, they said, had an accident of the Azores. And this was kept secret for many years. And they went to untold machinations to be sure that nobody found out. But what happened many years ago, the Navy found the Titanic, and they were able to explore it for very carefully and do all kinds of measurements for 3 years before they decided to let anybody else on the in on the secret. And they made a deal with Bob Ballard that if Bob would go to the Azores and videotape the remains of the Skipjack, which was not true. I mean, there were no remains there. There was nothing to photograph. All he took was pictures of junk. They would tell Ballard after completion of his video expedition where the Titanic was, and let him claim that he found the Titanic, but it was actually the Navy that found it, and they had known about it for 3 years before they ever told Ballard. We've covered pretty much of Area 51, including the secret test site and the secret subway. What they did was, a few years ago, anybody that violated the security restrictions within the test site, they would send to jail at a federal prison in Lovelock, Nevada. And what they didn't realize is, since the prisoners had no hope of getting out and really had no benefit of keeping more secrets, started telling all the other prisoners about the different levels and the aliens and all the secret stuff that was going on. So they had to build their own prison, which they built their own max, I think they call them supermax prison in the middle of the test site. And now, instead of going to Lovelock, they go to this prison. Gravity, I just covered briefly at the beginning, and that was that Isaac Newton's second law of gravity is wrong. He proposed that gravity was caused by mass, and a wonderful mathematician, fantastic lady named Barry Fulter, I think she's still alive, wrote a book in 1993 called The Gravitational Force of the Sun, and she proves that gravity does not come from the mass. Does not come from mass. That's why so many lunar expeditions crashed, because they were assuming Isaac Newton's theory that the mass, which was 1/6 that of Earth, was the actual gravitational pull of the moon, when actually it's 69.71. And Perry Spolter is the one that told me that. And it also negates everything that Einstein proposed. All his stuff was just out the window. She's a great lady. She spent a lot of time with me explaining detailed out work because my mathematics was only a year of college and I needed just a little bit more to understand all that she had found out, and she spent a lot of time telling me. So she's done a lot of great work. Nonsense, you know, the Earth has been here for 19 billion, for 13 billion years. There is no warming. It may be warming temporarily, but it's going to be, it's not going to last. For anybody who would like to know if monsters exist, all you have to do is get Nick Reverend's book called The Monster Book, and it's stories of current monsters accounts of current people who have seen them. And it's really an interesting book. When I got finished, I thought, wow, I didn't know any of that stuff. It's a good book. It's called The Monster Book, Nick Redford. The Kandahar Giant is completely separate from that. The Kandahar Giant was found out by a military team out of Kandahar, Afghanistan. And what happened, they were on a search mission, and it was just a regular team with about 8 or 10 guys in it, soldiers, and they were hiking along this narrow path above this steep valley. And this path was only like 12 to 18 inches wide. They were just going along here to the east, and they came around this corner, and there's a cave that it's about 15 feet tall, and standing in the middle of the cave was a 12-foot giant with red hair, red beard, and holding a spear. And it took them about 30 minutes to kill this giant. The giant was very well balanced, and he gave him quite a problem, but they eventually killed him. They called back to Kandahar. They sent a helicopter, lowered a net, put the giant in the net, took him back to Kandahar, flew him to Frankfurt, and then to the U.S., and I don't know what happened to him there. Antarctica is pretty interesting. Linda Moulton Howe has done the best work on Antarctica. I don't know that much about it. I'm just putting in that I know there is a huge extraterrestrial base. I believe it's only been there for 300 or 400 years. The original maps of Antarctica show it completely ice-free. And then only in the past few hundred years has it been under ice, and it's to hide this alien civilization.